Well, hello everyone, and welcome to episode 41 of the Going Deeper podcast. My name is JD, and I'll be your host for today. Alongside me today is Jeff.
Morning, everybody.
And no one else, as a matter of fact. Unfortunately, Adam is ill today, not feeling so great, and so he wasn't able to join us today, but we will hopefully get him back on here next week. Want to just kind of start today. This is obviously a big week for Good News Gathering. This is our annual Roots service coming up on Friday and Saturday and Sunday. We've got the four services planned: Friday night at 7:30, Saturday at 3:30 and 7:30, and then Sunday at 10:45. This is a really exciting Roots this year. And Dad, why don't you just kind of jump in real quick and just kind of give us where you are on the Roots process and how you feel like things are going.
Well, I'm really excited about this Roots because I think it's always good when you see the next generation coming up in your church and you see them taking on bigger and bigger roles. And that's what our church family is going to see this year. Is we've got a lot of young people and a lot of very talented young people who have really put in a tremendous amount of work over the summer to get ready for this. And I think it's going to be exciting for the entire church family to see them step up and do well, which they will.
One of the exciting things was last night we had our final dress rehearsal. Mm-hmm. We had about, I don't know, 30-40 people there, probably.
I would say, yeah.
To take that in and to just be a part of that. And it was really exciting because I felt like the rehearsal went really well. And all the band and the dancers and the lighting and graphics and sound guys, everybody, backstage folks, everybody just did a really good job. So if you're out there and listening and you're coming to Roots, I think you have a lot to be excited about. I think it's going to be a really fun service this year. But also, if you're out there and you're listening to this and you're kind of on the fence as to whether or not you're going to be able to be there, I would really encourage you because I think it'll be a very strong and edifying time. Now, the theme for this Roots is fairly interesting, kind of a little bit of a different direction than we've gone before in the past. It's called Through This Valley. Dad, why don't you give us just a little bit of a sense of what that's about and where we're heading with that?
Well, the phrase "through this valley" is really taken from Psalm 23, which is a passage of scripture that we have recited as a prayer in all of our practices leading up to this Roots. It's been the theme that all the music kind of wraps around, and so that whole idea that, you know, life has its ups and downs, its peaks and its valleys, and the beauty of Christianity is knowing that God walks with you through the valleys that happen in every life. And so that's the music really supplements that theme. Mm.
One of the things that we decided to do as we went into this year was to try to make Roots not only just the music event as we know it, and the services and all of the musical and dramatic elements that typically go with that, the technical elements that go with that, but we really wanted to expand the reach of Roots kind of in conjunction to some degree or another with our Hillsborough Not As Usual project and other things that we're doing to be also a time of service as well as a time of, you know, music and fun and enjoyment. And so we threw a challenge out to our audience, the what we're calling the Pre-Roots Intentional Acts of Kindness project. Dad, why don't you give us a little bit of a reminder of what that is, and we'll kind of talk about that for a second.
Well, the idea was to encourage our entire church family to engage in intentional acts of kindness with their neighbors, our coworkers, people at school, family members, whoever they come in contact with, and to engage in some intentional act of kindness that would also include an invitation to people to come to Roots. And so some people have been going through the drive-through at local restaurants and then paying for the person behind them and leaving a card. Others have been leaving generous tips for a server with a card. But there have been plenty of intentional acts of kindness that haven't involved money at all. And so people just helping their neighbors, but then inviting them to Roots and giving them one of the Roots cards. And so it's just been an awesome, awesome outreach into our community. In fact, our extension team went to the Boo Fest, which is the Uptown Halloween night. Mm-hmm. And at that particular event, they handed out candy to the children along with a Roots card. And I think they hit 1,000. A thousand cards were given out, and so that was exciting. But as far as individuals within our congregation, Jay, I think you've got a number on that,
right? So one of the things that we asked of our audience was to fill out an anonymous online survey, so that we could kind of get a sense of how many people had actually reached out to folks. In both service and invitation to Roots, or done an intentional act of kindness. And I'm really pleased to report that as of this morning, I actually tabulated this just before we walked in here. We have reached 255. Intentional acts of kindness.
That's awesome.
In the community, aside from the 1,000 people that were impacted at Boo Fest, that number is not included in the number that, so 255, individual acts of kindness and invitation, over the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks, which is really exciting. I think our goal was 250, mm-hmm. That we advertised to our church family back on the 14th, and really to be a few days ahead of Roots still, and to have 255 intentional acts of kindness having been done, that's a pretty good number.
Yeah, I'm really excited and very pleased with that.
It's a big win for our church family right there.
Mm-hmm. And that doesn't include the Ward 3 drop,
right?
That's going to be happening.
Yeah, we're going to
explain that a little bit.
Yeah, tonight, as part of the Hillsborough Not As Usual project, we will be doing a drop of invitations in Ward 3 as well. So we'll be doing a bunch of inviting in Ward 3 tonight. So that's going to be really exciting also.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah. Now I actually had an interesting story about the Intentional Acts of Kindness project. It was kind of funny last night. I took the kids to the park. On the way home, I decided to stop and get them some McDonald's. And because they were hungry, and I pull into the drive-thru and nobody was behind me, so I was like, oh, okay, I guess no big deal, not going to be able to pay behind or anything. So I order the food, drive on around, and I get to the window, and the woman behind the cash register window where you pay first and then you drive up and get your food, right? Well, she just didn't open her window. And she was just kind of standing there, and it looked like she was maybe taking an order, but I still didn't see a car behind me. So I was like, just kind of sitting there waiting to pay. And finally she opens the window and she tells me how much it is. And I just said, hey, by chance, did you happen to have an order come in behind me? And she's like, yeah. And so then I see the car pull in behind me. And it was funny because it was only one person in the car, but the other car had an Imperial Stormtrooper from Star Wars in the other seat. It was really kind of funny. I was wondering what an Imperial Stormtrooper orders from McDonald's. I'm sure he's a chicken nuggets guy. But anyway, so I say, hey, here's some money, pay for the person behind me too, and make sure you give them that card. And out of nowhere, Maxon is like, Daddy, don't give away all your money. Don't give away all your money. And I mean, and what was funny about it is
we're going to have to work on sharing in right, the lower right, age ranges, you know, like, here. Good
don't,
news.
Don't give away all your money. And
we're going to have to talk to Adam about what's going on in next gen.
Right, yeah. Right. We're clearly not working the sharing angle in our house right now. It was only one person, so the order was actually very small. It wasn't a substantial order. So I paid for it, and
stormtroopers don't eat.
Stormtroopers,
right?
I guess don't get food. I think it was like either a mannequin type thing or it might have even been a seat cover that looked like a stormtrooper. I didn't look too much enough to tell, but it was definitely a stormtrooper. Anyway, I hand the card to the woman. I said, make sure you give this. And she's like, I will. She's like, that's really nice, by the way. And I was just like, I kind of waved off the compliment. But, like, it was one of those things that, like, you know, that is a cool thing. And the interesting thing is the impact it had on the person that wasn't even receiving the act of kindness, you know. It's kind of like that commercial, you know, from – it was an insurance company or something like that where, you know – some person did an act of kindness for somebody else, and then another person saw it. And then at a different place, at a different time, they did an act of kindness that showed up in somebody else's life, and somebody else saw it, and they did something later. And it just kind of has ripple effects. And those acts of kindness, we have no idea how far they'll go. And we really have no idea how many people will actually show up to Roots as a result of those acts of kindness. But the hope is that there's still time, and we would still love for you to report how many acts of kindness you've done. Again, it's anonymous, so nobody's getting any credit for this. The goal isn't to, like, you know, tout what we're doing as much as it is to be clear that we have this responsibility, not only to serve the neighbors around us, but invite them to church so that they can be exposed to the message of Christ.
And you never know what the residual impact will be, right? Because quite often, I mean, we used to be, back when Good News was very young, we would do mass mailers, and quite often we would send those mass mailers out, and people would come to us months and months later and say, well, I mean, when you sent that thing out, I didn't actually come at that point, but I've had something happen in my life.
Right.
And they had kept that mailer stuck on their fridge, or they'd thrown it in a corner or whatever. But when they felt a need, maybe they had a death in the family or something went haywire in their life, and they began to look for answers, they found that card and said, I'm going to go to that church and see if they have an answer.
Right.
And so even if people don't make it to Roots because of some of the things we've done, perhaps a month or 6 months or a year later from now, they'll pull that card out and say, hey, maybe I need to check this out.
Right. Right. And those impacts are really important. And it kind of segues really nicely into the lesson that you just gave this past Sunday, called Radical Vision. Kind of give us a sense of where you went with that lesson.
Well, last Sunday's lesson and all these lessons in this series have really kind of built on each other or played off of each other. And this last Sunday, Radical Vision, really, really kind of plays off the previous week, which was Radical Strategy. And what we talked about in that particular lesson was Jesus' instruction in Matthew 28 to go into all the world, to make disciples, and to teach people to obey everything Jesus commanded. And he really laid that responsibility on us. And the thing that we as a church have to understand is that there is no plan B. He left us, his followers, with the responsibility of taking the good news into the entire world. And that's a responsibility we cannot deny. It's a responsibility we cannot shirk. And so that's a responsibility he gave to us. And as we went into this week, we were really looking at why that radical vision that we have as a church, which is to be an outward-focused community of committed Christians, why that's so important. And the reality is it's a bleak reality for people without Christ. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we can't deny, and we can't avoid that reality, because when we do that not only to the peril of the people around us who don't know or haven't heard the good news, but we do that also to our own peril, mm-hmm. because that is the command Christ placed upon us. And so we began by looking at the illustration that Jesus used in the Sermon on the Mount of the wide gate and the narrow gate. And Jesus was very clear that there are two paths in life, only two. And one is a wide gate with a wide road, and there's lots of people on it. And the other is a narrow gate with a narrow road, and very few people are on it. The problem is the wide gate and the wide road lead to destruction, mm-hmm. to death. But the narrow gate and the narrow path lead to life. And so we have to understand that every person we run into is going to choose a gate. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be, yeah. and there's going to be a destination.
Right.
And it's our responsibility to at least allow them the opportunity to know there's a narrow gate and a narrow way that leads to life. Mm-hmm. And hopefully encourage them to go through that gate.
Right. Now the emphasis, therefore, because we understand that there is a wide gate and a wide road that leads to destruction, and a narrow gate and a narrow road that leads to life. The emphasis there is that at that point, our lives should truly be bound up in the pursuit of reaching people with the message of Jesus.
Exactly. That is our purpose.
Reason for being.
Yes. Yeah. And we have to understand that, not just as individual Christians, but as a church family as well. Mm-hmm. We have to be on the lookout and on the hunt. I mean, that's why Jesus used the phrase, "I will make you fishers of men." He expected us to go fish for people.
Right.
No question about that. And we looked at what the Apostle Paul wrote in the Romans, early chapters yeah. of Romans.
Right.
And when you read that and you read it for what it says, you realize just how important it is for us to reach people.
Right.
And there's no two ways about that. And you think about it, Paul begins in Romans 1, and I would really encourage everybody to read Romans 1, beginning at 16 and going to the end of that chapter. Because what he does is he begins by introducing the theme of salvation, or being in a right relationship with God, as a gift of grace from God through faith in Jesus Christ. And then he goes on to develop that theme later on in Romans 3 through 5. But he presents the overwhelming evidence of man's sinfulness in Romans 1, and he really underscores how desperately we need the righteousness that comes only through Christ. And so what he does in Romans 1, 18 through 32, is he presents the case against what in those days they would have called Gentiles, or non-Jews, people who did not have access to the Old Testament or even to a knowledge of Jesus. And many of us struggle with, well, what happens to people that never had a Bible or never got to hear the good news of Jesus? And so what you have is, in the one sense, in Romans 1, chapters or verses 18 through 32, Paul is directing his attention at Gentiles, okay, non-Jews. But then in Romans 2, beginning in verse 1 and going through chapter 3, verse 8, Paul addresses Jews, those who did have the Old Testament, and thus a basis for understanding why Jesus came into the world. And so he's really dealing with both non-Jews and then Jews. And the conclusion is the same. And that is that all people deserve God's judgment. You find this in Romans 3, 23, where he says, all have sinned and fall short of God's glorious standard. And so he says that the wrath of God is being revealed. Now, this is not some impulsive outburst of anger aimed at people that God doesn't like. That's not what the word wrath means. It's the settled or determined response of a righteous God against sin. And that phrase, the wrath of God is being revealed, what that means is it's constantly being revealed. God reveals his wrath against sin indirectly, sometimes through natural consequences of sin, the natural consequences of violating his moral law. And sometimes he intervenes directly through intervening in history and in our lives. And at times, due to the wickedness of people, God will remove his restraining hand. That's why in Romans 1 it talks about he gave them over, it says. In other words, he allows...
Scary reality.
Oh, man, he just allows sin to run its course. And that consequence always involves a death of some kind. And that's both on an individual and also on a societal level. So when sin begins to run rampant in a culture, there are times when God will remove his hand and sin takes its course. You see it referred to as early as Genesis 6, where it talks about how the wickedness of man became so great that violence was the order of the day.
Mm-hmm.
As if we don't see evidence of that today.
Right.
But then in Romans 1:18 and 19, he indicates that we suppress the truth. In other words, there is truth about God, there's truth about the created order, and there is also truth about a moral order in the universe that is plain to people, and that we suppress the truth. It's plain to us because God has made it plain to us, Paul says. But despite this, we reject God and his moral law at some point. We are all, at some point in our lives, suppressors of the truth. And when we suppress the truth about God, then Paul describes this downward spiral of sin. And the way it works is this: whenever we replace God with idols of our own choosing, whether that was back in his day with idols made by human hands, or whether in our day it's the idol of wealth, or the idol of prestige, or the idol of sex, whatever it is, we have to understand that at some point, when we reject God and replace him with other gods, this spiral of sin will begin. There will be a lack of restraint. And this shows itself especially in the sexual realm. And Paul refers to this in detail in that passage. And not only do we reject God or reject his word if we're familiar with it, but sexually speaking, we begin to reject the created order. And the ultimate end of that, Paul refers to a depraved mind, so that they do what ought not to be done. And so, having already addressed sexual sin in that passage, Paul goes on to list a variety of sinful behaviors in Romans 1:29 through 31. And it's a horrible list as you read that.
Yeah, it's a who's who of sin.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah, he kinda pours it on thick.
Right. Evil, greed, mm-hmm. depravity, envy,
yeah.
murder, strife, deceit, malice, gossip, slanderers, God haters, insolent, arrogant, boastful.
Yeah. Disobedient
to their parents.
Right. I mean, he doesn't leave many stones unturned.
Right. Senseless, faithless, heartless, ruthless.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because, like I said earlier, we often question, well, what about people that didn't know? And Paul really attacks that. We ask that question, how do Gentiles know the truth about God? And in Romans 2:14 and 15, Paul talks about the work of the law that's written in the heart and on the conscience. These internal sources, what some theologians, and I mentioned this on Sunday, refer to as the imprint of the divine, indicate that this sense of right and wrong and the conviction that wrong deserves a penalty is embedded into the human conscience. The knowledge that there is a right and a wrong, and that certain acts are wrong and will be judged, comes from within us as beings created by a righteous God. Now, we can suppress it, but the reality is we are without excuse, Paul says. No one, other than perhaps the truly mentally deficient, will be able to stand before God and say, I didn't know. And Paul closes Romans 1:32 with a dire warning, and this is something that I think the church in America today has to be very, very aware of, because Paul kind of sets it out there that what's worse than just committing these sins is both committing them and encouraging others to commit them as well.
Romans 1:32, although they knew God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to do those very things, but also approve of those who practice them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not only is it wrong to engage in those sinful behaviors, but when you approve those in other people.
Or say, no, that's not wrong anymore, that's right.
Right. There you have crossed into very dangerous ground.
So for in kind of thinking in terms of where we are in this study overall, as far as the radical study is concerned, and where we are kind of in the life of our church family and trying to engage people in the reality and the necessity of being bearers of the good news to the world around us. In trying to sum all that up, I guess what jumps out at me is we have a responsibility to not only share the good news of Christ, but to share the whole of the truth of the good news of Christ. Not just the happy, like, hey, everybody gets forgiven for their sins and, you know, heaven's out there and available, but the reality of there are things that you can do that will cause the wrath of God in your life.
Exactly.
And there are ways that you can live that will separate you from Him both temporally and eternally.
True.
And we have to be willing to say that to the world around us.
That is correct. Otherwise, we are suppressing the truth.
Right.
And that is something that the church cannot do.
Yeah.
We can't.
Yeah.
And when we do, we not only bring God's wrath upon us, but we allow it to hit people that should have otherwise known.
Mm. Okay. Right.
Because we didn't accept the responsibility Christ gave us.
Mm. It reminds me to some degree or another of the comment he made to the Pharisees, and the context was definitely different. So I'm not trying to draw direct parallels from one to the other, but he made the comment to the Pharisees, you know, you climb over heaven and earth to win a convert, but then make him twice as much a son of hell as you are. Mm-hmm. You know, in many cases when we, and we see this in not only the American church, but definitely in the American church, a willingness to jettison pieces of Scripture,
sure,
to jettison things that we for centuries have believed about what the Bible says about certain subjects. And now here in recent years, we see a lot of hacking and cutting and slicing and taking out and removing, or, sure, you know what, we used to think this, but now we think this, even though the Bible itself has not changed.
Think about it. Some churches are actually having the Bible excise certain passages.
Right.
They're just simply taking them out,
right,
of the versions that they use in their church, which is mystifying to me if you read Revelation.
Right. 22.
Because there, yeah, are plagues that accompany that.
Right. Yeah. You're calling down some definitive issues upon, yeah, yourself, right?
And I'm not sure if that qualifies as bravery or abject stupidity.
Right.
To do that.
Well, it's a grave thing to be placed into the situation where God hands you over, as Romans indicated. But we see that in the American church, this tendency to kind of want to fashion God in our own image or in the image of the cultural mores of our day.
Yeah, and I think all of us individually struggle with that.
Right.
We all want to fashion God in our own image, and that's the danger.
Right.
And we have to take him at his word.
Right.
Not at our own. Mm-hmm. And that's what we all want to do.
So thinking practically here, in terms of, I think one of the typical challenges for many Christians is, okay, how do I go about evangelizing? How do I go about being a bringer of the good news to people? It's inevitable, you know, because we almost always put some form of the question on the survey that we do annually, like how many invitations are you giving out? How many times have you shared your faith with an individual in the past year? Questions like that. And invariably, when you throw things out there like that, you get responses like, I don't know how to answer all the questions people have, and I don't know all the stuff there is to know about the Bible, and yada yada yada. So, practically speaking, what are some activities? What are some things that we can do to best promote the good news in the relationships that we have in the world around us? What are some good things that we as Christians can go, all right, if I do this, I am actively participating in the promotion of the good news in the world around me.
Well, in the radical strategy lesson 2 weeks ago, we talked about that very question. Because you're right. I mean, quite often Christians say, okay, Jesus said, go make disciples. Mm-hmm. How do I do that?
Right.
Well, you know, when you think about making a disciple is simply another follower. Mm-hmm. Of Jesus Christ. And it begins with a relationship. People want, I mean, in order to impact people, you have to be in some kind of relationship with them. One of the reasons that we promote so heavily here at Good News, the doing of acts of kindness or serving people, is because quite often that is the first step in relationship building.
Right.
You have to connect with other people in some way. And when you serve people, you give them an opportunity to observe you and to observe how you're living your life. I think of what the Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians 11. He said, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. Well, the only way you're going to know somebody's example is if you see it in action.
Right.
And so we have to get in relationship with people to where we're rubbing elbows with them, we're spending time with them, so that we can actually be an example for them. Okay? It's not, and I kind of use this illustration during that particular lesson, it's not about us all being the next Billy Graham and right. standing up in front of large crowds and speaking about Jesus. For most of us, it's connecting with one or two other people who are far from God and allowing them into our life mm-hmm. so that we can actually serve them and impact them and at some point have the opportunity to say, this is what Christ means to me. Well, this is what he's done in my life.
Right. And in books like Romans and 1 Corinthians, you get passages about the spiritual gifts. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, Paul says to some, it was given the task of evangelism. Mm-hmm. To some, it was given the task of service. To some, it was given the task of, the gift of encouragement or hospitality, or you get all these spiritual gifts. The reality is not everyone is wired to be an evangelist in the very specific technical sense of the New Testament, i.e. a large scale speaker like a Billy Graham or Peter in Acts 2 when he stands up in front of thousands and thousands of people and you know, many thousands of them come to faith, that 3,000 of them come to faith in that one day. Not everybody can do that. That's a very evangelism in the New Testament is a very very specific spiritual gift that not everyone has. But everyone is called to the task of making disciples.
Exactly.
So there may be different ways that you approach that. Not everybody is called to be a Billy Graham or some deep level theologian that understands all of the implications of every piece or point of theology that you can find in the Bible. That's not what we're called to. We're called to developing relationships with individuals through which they can come to be exposed to Christ for themselves. I think you make a good point that it's through those acts of service, it's through the engagement and relationship that we have those opportunities.
Well, you think about how Jesus made disciples of the disciples.
Right.
He called them into relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And they traveled with him, they spent time with him, and they watched him do ministry.
Mm-hmm.
They watched him serve people. At times, he served them.
Right.
I mean, we have the story of Jesus finding out that Peter's mother-in-law is sick.
Right.
And he goes into the home and heals her. Well, he served her and in essence served Peter. And I'm sure Peter saw all that.
Right. Now, I will say this. When I was in Israel, I went on a trip to Israel back in 2005, maybe? The tour guide, as he was taking us through the town of Capernaum, where Peter lived, made the direct implication that quite possibly that's why Peter went on to deny Jesus later, was that he left his mother-in-law alive.
I'm not even touching that.
No, I had to laugh. As you were talking about that, I laughed really hard because man, that joke was he used that one and you got a bunch of 20 somethings. That was pretty funny.
But let's assure the audience that you have
I have a great mother-in-law. No issues at all there. that was funny. Sorry I interrupted, but that was just a humorous aside.
Now I can't even think of where I was.
Jesus serving the apostles.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it. They essentially did life together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really how you make a disciple. Because you know, they need to learn and to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only going to do that when they are around somebody who is one or two steps ahead of them in the spiritual journey.
Right.
And if you can bring somebody along, that's really what it's all about.
Well, you know, another thing that I don't think that we can underestimate is the power of prayer in this process. You know, one of the single most important acts of evangelism, if you want to put it that way, is the act of praying for people that don't yet have the faith you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it was interesting, you know, that passage, and we went over it in the radical study in the life group piece. You know, it's Matthew 9 and kind of bleeding into 10, that whole idea of, Jesus saying, ask the Lord of the harvest to send workers into the harvest field. You know, in other words, see around you that there are people that are in need. You know, the harvest is great, Jesus says, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord. In other words, pray that more people will be going out in service to reach the community, that more people will be intentional about reaching out and developing those relationships, and that you yourself be praying for individuals you know that God has called you to serve, and you can know that because God has placed them in your life.
Mm.
You know, you, right. you can't go serve a person that's not in your life. But if you have a neighbor, they are in your life, and you should go try to reach them
sure.
with the message of Christ. Like, it's not hard to know who God is sending you to, because you know who lives on your block, and you know who you work with, and you know who you go, what stores you go to, and things of that nature. I mean, when you see people regularly, that's who it is that God wants you to go to. And it's that asking of God to offer you opportunities and being willing to step into them when he presents them, that is really important.
Well, I think if each one of us in the GNG family thinks of our family, our work environment, or our school environment, the different environments that we operate in, if each one of us would view them as a divine assignment,
right?
That's the key. If we would see in each of those environments that there are people there who do not know Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
and it's my assignment to in some way impact them for him,
mm-hmm.
to try and create a relationship with those folks, to serve them and to do life with them in some way, shape, or form, in order that at some point we can share the good news with them. That's the key.
Mm-hmm. Well, guys, we hope this has been helpful and edifying to you as you walk into your week. We would really encourage you, if you're out there and you have the opportunity to engage in some more of those pre-roots intentional acts of kindness, we would love for you to keep doing that. We would love for that really to be a year-long thought process for you, not just around roots. We pushed it at this time of year, but you know that the reality is we are called to be people of service at all times and in every way. And so please continue to do that. If you have the opportunity to let us know on that anonymous survey that you've done that, we would love to have a really good idea about how many acts of kindness that have been done through this church over the course of the last few weeks. So I would encourage you guys in that. Secondly, we would invite you guys to be praying for roots this coming weekend, that on the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of November, that God would just bring a lot of people who really need to hear the message of his son into the building that weekend, and that we will have a great weekend and great performances, but most importantly, that those who are far from God would have an opportunity to really hear the message of his son. So we would encourage you guys to be praying for it, to be here, to have a lot of fun, and really to truly participate in the service, because your participation and in the worship times and in the other elements of the service is a really huge impact on the people that come that aren't church people, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Worship has a tendency of being a very powerful and engaging aspect of these services, and we would invite you guys to be a part of that and join in. Anything final closing thoughts on that, Dad, before we sign off here?
I would just say a couple of things. First of all, arrive early. The doors open about 30 minutes prior to the service beginning, and seats are typically at a premium,
right?
Especially on Friday nights. So arrive early, and please make a point of, you know, reaching out to somebody that you don't know and introducing yourself and just telling them you're happy to see them here at Good News. And and also, when you enter the auditorium, move down and move in. Let's be courteous to our guests and leave the back aisles, the aisles in the back rows available for them.
Okay. Well, guys, we hope you have a great week. We hope to see as many of you as possible out at Roots. If you have any questions, as always, you can get those to us at info@goodnewsgathering.org or on or via communication card that you just write the question on and drop in the containers when you are here on Sunday morning. We'll get to those questions and try to get those insights in there as best we can. Guys, thank you so much for listening, and we hope that you have a great day. Take care.
Take care, everybody.